Hello, everyone, and welcome to our live discussion on the Economics Design Discord channel. My name is Ari Kimmelman. I'm a research analyst here with Economics Design, and I'm very excited to be joined by our guest, Salvatore Grosso, the game economy designer of the blockchain game Skyweaver. So today, we're going to be having a conversation with Salvatore about the economics of the game. So thank you for joining me today, Salvatore. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, it's good to be here, Ari. Thank you for having me.
Great. So for today's conversation, I would like to first go over some general information about Skyweaver and then dive into a general discussion about its economics. At the end of the discussion, I'll open the floor up to anyone who has questions in the audience. And so with that said, Salvatore, could you please introduce yourself?
Yes. So I am Salvatore. I've been making games since I was very little. During college, when my apps did pretty decent, I got inspired to think bigger. It was around that time I got interested in crypto, wanted to make a crypto game, but this was 2017, 2018, so there weren't too many resources at the time. After a few pitches that went nowhere, I ended up actually running into Michael Sanders at a gaming conference in Toronto. And it was just one of those funny moments. We were just both smiling. We just both kind of knew something. So yeah, that was 4 years ago, and I've been working on the economy alongside two other absolute geniuses, Philippe and Peter, ever since.
Great. And it's also great to have another Canadian on the call for today. Both Salvatore and I are located here in Canada. So great. Salvatore, to begin, could you please tell us a little bit about what Skyweaver is and what stage of development the project is currently at?
All right. Skyweaver is a digital card game that replicates the physical trading aspects of other TCGs like Magic or Yu-Gi-Oh. The gameplay is easy to learn. And like Hearthstone, it takes advantage of the fact that it is a digital-first game. So it includes similarly fun mechanics you wouldn't find in other physical game. So open beta went live earlier this year. Definitely check it out if you enjoy card games or you've been interested to try a card game.
Mm-hmm. I played the open beta just recently and I had a great time. So I also would recommend to the audience to check it out. Salvatore, could you explain how the cards are acquired in the game and what inspired the game's economic design?
Yes. As you can understand, the cards in a card game are the most important resource because they directly influence your ability to perform. So they're basically the tools of this virtual world that we build. So it became pretty clear to us early on that these tools need to be accessible. Otherwise, people would seek out a different game that's more fair to them, because at the end of the day, no one is constrained to a particular virtual world. And really, if you want to capture and maintain a large player base, you have to respect that. So every card in Skyweaver can be unlocked for free with no money spent. Yeah, it takes time to achieve this, but it is possible. You could do it within a year of casual play. But having said that, you don't even need all the cards to compete. Just a single deck would do. And we give you 5 unique decks right off the bat, which is like a fifth of the total card pool right now. And to be clear, these aren't weak decks. It's the way we approach card design in Skyweaver is akin to having different tools. A hammer isn't necessarily better than a mallet, right? They both have their uses. And that's why we don't give you all the tools right away. And I actually don't even think players would enjoy that if we did, because it needs to be a strong sense of progression. Otherwise, it's just less meaningful things players can work towards. So, but I've only touched on the what we call base cards. So these base cards are not tradable. But we do have other card grades. Obviously, we have called silver and gold. And these any of the cards can be obtained as a silver or gold. And any of the cards you can obtain from these two card grades can basically also be unlocked as a base card. And they're the exact same power-wise. The difference lies in the tradability and supply. So both the silver and gold cards can be traded, but only the silver cards have an uncapped supply while the golds have a fixed supply. And players will often buy silvers for the utility that they unlock. And while they'll buy the golds for, are often the golds are collected for a myriad of reasons. But before I get ahead of myself with the card grades, I just wanted to highlight something very important. The fact that tradable versions of our cards exists means players can circumvent whatever progression system we throw at them from unlocking the base card. And really, the only tool that Web3 game designers have against this kind of scenario is to construct the economy in a way where the cost to acquire the important items that influence like the game that players would work towards, making them quite high, such that it's like prohibitively expensive. But that is of course easier said than done, since if it's truly a Web3 game, it'll have an open economy. So basically, it's critical to place focus on many other elements of the progression loop that players cannot overcome with cash. So it's a process that requires constant iteration, and that's fine. That's totally fine. It's just as long as we identify these challenges with incorporating tradable items and just plan accordingly.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things you mentioned is that the higher cards don't provide an advantage within the game itself. They're only cosmetic. Could you share why this decision was made by the team?
Yeah. While the silver and gold cards are equal to their base card equivalent in terms of the mechanics, these two card grades do offer more than just cosmetic appeal. It's all by themselves. It's actually pretty dope. But anyways, as I mentioned, players often buy silver cards to expedite their collection. But what I didn't say was they also grant points in this hardcore pay-to-enter game mode we call Conquest. Basically, the more Conquest you play in a week, the greater your treasure chest will be at the week's conclusion. And of course, these treasures contain rewards. There's only USDC inside them for now, but certainly that this will evolve to feel less transactional and much more rewarding in the future.
So I would say that there's an interesting mechanic included within the game. And this is the fact that there's a fee to participate in the Conquest game mode that you were just explaining. And either a person has to pay $1.50 USDC or give a silver card. So I'm wondering if you could share why this mechanic was included in the game.
Conquest is at the heart of all of this. And as a company, we don't sell cards. Tradable silver and gold cards are produced through gameplay. Players consume tickets to enter a single elimination asynchronous mini tournament, basically. And it's here you can win up to 3 games in a row. If you lose once, it's game over, and your prize at the end is based on how far you went. So win once, you'll receive a silver card, win twice, you'll receive 2 silver cards, and win 3 times, and you'll get a silver and gold. The silver cards you get are randomly selected from the total card pool, but the gold cards are selected from a small set of 4. So each week, this small set of gold cards rotates out, and once it does, the supply cap for those golds are forever locked. This is why gold cards have a fixed supply. They're only available to purchase or win once they become on offer through Conquest. So now, Conquest isn't the only way to win the tradable cards. Right now, each week, we distribute silver cards to the top players on the ranked leaderboard. So this is also where we distribute tickets in order to play Conquest. But for those that want more tickets, they can be purchased from us for $1.50. Or you can burn a silver card for 1. So it's pretty simple on the surface, but the implications are pretty compelling. The fact that silver cards can be recycled into tickets allows for the card supply to contract based on periods of low demand. So when 8 players enter a conquest, only 5 silvers and 1 gold are produced. Therefore, it's possible for the entire silver card supply to compress back into nothing, as if it never existed. And when it comes to laying the foundation for your world's economy, I think that's a good property to have. As for the game mode itself, from a game design enjoyment perspective, I think Conquest can sometimes fall short because it's really tough. The players are insanely good, not because they have powerful decks, but because they have such a deep knowledge of the game. A lot of projects in this space might strive for stability. Like they could very well thinking it's like the last or the be-all end-all, but in reality, solving it just leads to more challenges that maybe you cannot be solved through economy design. I say this because you may not wish to rely solely on one type of core faucet. Skyweaver is very skill-based, so the bar to entry for someone as competitive as Conquest is extremely high. But Conquest is that core faucet for us. And from an economic standpoint, it works very well. So we're definitely planning to keep it. But next year, though, I think it would be great to expand on this concept. And that likely would mean introducing like a draft mode, which would be more inviting to the average player. It wouldn't require them to commit like a crazy amount of time in order to be successful and have fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And I think the point you made there about the ostensibly never-ending challenges, is an interesting idea. Could you share why the decision was made to not sell cards to players? And was this a difficult decision given it misses out on potential revenue for the project?
Yeah, well, the decision to go this model was actually not too difficult when I look back. We were pretty naive. We're still naive, so that helped. But once we simulated how the economics would play out and compared it to a model where we would sell cards directly, the idea path was pretty clear. It was certainly novel that posed some risk, but the alternatives that we were thinking at the time just didn't make much sense. We didn't want to sell packs or do some convoluted sticky bonding curve vested unlock thing. So we went with something we thought really took advantage of all this new tech that makes up Web3. And in doing so, we discovered a lot. Don't sell items, sell the experience is what I like to say now, because in addition to the digital, in the digital world, we have the ability to tokenize these experiences into items. So this way, we end up tying the production of items to time. In the case of Skyweaver, skill as well. So with tradable items in open markets, if someone doesn't have enough time or skill, they can just purchase the item from another player. And if the band can't meet supply fast enough, we end up automatically leveraging the game's monetization to attract more players. That the value that Conquest generates is shared with the participants. And it's likely that that value will remain within the game because the inherent purchasing appeal is strengthened by all the streaming discussions and content that'll come up as a result of all this time and skill that's required. So, but it's been an uphill battle, though, I have to say, despite the good intentions and a real desire to change the industry for the better, our narrative has yet to catch on. Most crypto natives and Web3 users ended up going for less conservative, high-risk projects, ones with a token or pre-sale or more tempting economics that they can buy into. And most gamers just didn't want anything to do with blockchain and NFTs, as you know. So for a while there, we were stuck between a rock and a hard place. As the dust settles from the previous cycle, I hope we can start to gain more favor from both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I'd like to move the conversation onto a little bit of a different topic. So let's talk about NFTs. NFTs are a hot topic in gaming. I'm wondering, how do you see the trend of NFTs being implemented in gaming over the next few years?
I think devs will adopt fungible items more than non-fungible ones. So NFTs are great for player stats and history or team and guild management, because putting that information on chain enables the community to really build on top of it. I don't think they necessarily need to be tradable. Of course, there's certainly a place for tradable NFTs in game, but if designers choose to incorporate them, it should come with a plan. For example, if you slay a monster and you get a new sword, you'll probably want to sell your old one at some point. So if this was the real world, you would be able to break it down into parts. And that's great because you might not have been able to find a buyer for your beat-up weapon, but a merchant, NPC or otherwise, will probably take the materials. Now, not every game is an RPG, and maybe the intention is to have old equipment be useless. Depending on the game, it could make sense. But if we're talking about tradable items, it does get a little bit complicated because you need to consider what role does equipment plays in your world? If you consider it a core part of the game's economy, some kind of recycle system should be considered and natively supported. Otherwise, you'll probably end up with useless items. If it's destined to hyperinflate and become worthless, this probably doesn't need to be tradable. So if you want to have something tradable, I think the versatility of your game items is what will ultimately inspire the most confidence. Players will find it difficult to accurately appraise items when they have to factor for things outside functional utility. So if you're able to simplify this for them on a technical level, then your virtual economy will function more optimally. Basically, sure, your old sword might have an alias inscribed and a number of monsters slain. It's unique. That's great. But when it comes time to sell it, you should have the option to treat it as a more standardized training sword, perhaps, or melt it down for what it's worth. I think it's best if we support these things at a protocol level so that the community can, once again, really build on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So I'm wondering, why did the team decide to go with their own marketplace? And how well does it compete with other platforms like OpenSea, where fees are lower?
Yeah, any Web3 game that enables trading should probably include a market in-game. Otherwise, the core experience will be fragmented between different products. If players are going to third-party apps to trade, then you're probably not going to be capturing that added value. Plus, you'll be unable to properly guide and reward those players. So sending them to another site or platform will really disrupt your core loop, especially if you don't own those outside products. So in realizing this, we created NiftySwap, not just for us, but also any Web3 developer. Basically, it's like a on-chain, fully decentralized marketplace that devs can plug into and deploy their own copy of. It works like Uniswap. It's an AMM, it's called, automated market maker. And it's specifically for game items or digital collectibles. So you'll have the option to include this protocol in your game directly or like as a dot exchange URL if your product's more like Web3 focused.
Mm-hmm. And for this AMM, are there arbitrage opportunities between NiftySwap and other marketplaces? And also, are there concerns about a potential lack of liquidity?
Yeah, a lack of liquidity results in a greater spread on the market, which means the discrepancy between buying and selling is wider. So when it comes to the more expensive items, this can lead to players trading more on Discord or other peer-to-peer apps. While liquidity providers of these items do collect a high percentage of the fees, the incentives are such where often the Web3 users aren't interested in supplying expensive low-cap items. So it ends up being the multi-purpose items like silver cards that tend to work best with NiftySwap. But as the player base grows, it should attract more Web3 users, which in turn have a positive compounding effect on the entire ecosystem. The greater the depth in your market, the easier it is for devs to capture the royalties that players might otherwise circumvent on account of large spreads. And even if players still prefer to trade between one another directly, despite how quick and easy NiftySwap is, that's totally fine. Arbitrage opportunities and bartering is fun. And players will still be able to do these things even with NiftySwap because they truly own their items and it's an open economy. So if your players are bartering on account of like a technical limitation, then it may not be perceived like fun. So I think fungible items, when considering all the incentives at play, they allow the market to do its thing much better than non-fungible items could.
Got it. And have there been any issues of players attempting to manipulate the liquidity pools in some way?
No. Before any new cards are available to players, we seed the market with a small number of cards in USDC just to ensure players can trade appropriately from the beginning. And we also do this for stickers, which are like Skyweaver emojis. But when it came to other items like crystals, which like change the color of your name in game, we never seeded the liquidity for those because we just never added a section in game for players to buy and sell them. But despite that, you could still find the crystals on NiftySwap since other Web3 users went ahead and added them. And that's totally cool.
I'm wondering if you could share some information about how cards are tracked, so if players are able to access how many cards are in circulation and their rarity.
Yes, directly in game, there. When you inspect a card on the market, you'll be able to view total supply and stock. The supply is the supply. The stock reflects how many copies of that card are available to purchase through NintySwap. And if a gold card is currently being minted in Conquest for that week, then there's like a little minting icon next to it so players can know that the total supply of that card is not currently locked. I can briefly, if you like, just explain like the AMM again for those that, because I know like there's some crossover, but maybe not a lot with DeFi. There's like two types of people that interact with NintySwap. There are like end users, so Skyweaver players who would go to the market in game and buy and sell any item instantly using USDC. There's no manual pricing, nor is there like a waiting period, because essentially these players are swapping their USDC for other tokens, specifically ERC-1155 tokens called SFTs. SFTs can do everything NFTs can do, but they can like also adopt all the same use cases as regular fungible tokens. And that's where this other type of person would come in, the liquidity provider. So liquidity providers or LPs, they're just Web3 users who would interact with NintySwap to provide deeper liquidity for Skyweaver players. They have an incentive to do this because they will collect fees on all the trades. That's why it's very similar to Uniswap, except we're only, of course, dealing with the digital collectibles. So it's great for LPs and it's great for Skyweaver players.
Got it. And so if we look at other blockchain games, we've seen a variety of different types of token models. We've seen no tokens, a single token, two tokens, and even three tokens in some cases. I'm wondering if you could explain why the team chose not to include a token like some other blockchain games.
We do have tokens. I know. Yeah. We don't have one of those tokens, the OG tokens, I don't know what you want to call them, but all of the silver and gold cards, yeah, the stickers, the crystals, these are all tokens. Everything I've talked about so far, the Conquest rewards, ranked leaderboard, Nifty Swap, we all did this just using the digital collectibles, the 1155 tokens. And when it came to the market for players to buy and sell, it just didn't make sense to us to expose players to what would have been volatility squared. We thought the items themselves would have enough going on, so that's why we paired them with USDC. Sure, if we had a token, we'd get a lot more attention. It may not have been the best kind of attention, but generally speaking, attention is great for the bottom line. But if it comes at the expense of the game's economy, then that's not good. So, or more accurately, it's not good if you're aiming for longevity. And when it comes to governing rights or DAOs, depending on how far you go with it, you could risk compromising everything under some short-sighted plutocracy. So I think we got to tread carefully. It's hard to predict if token holders would be influencing the direction of your virtual world. Like, it's hard if these token holders, it's hard to predict if they're going to have the best interest at heart, basically. And if they have some power over the world, or maybe majority, depending on what happens or how it's structured, that's the risk. But that being said, I do think DAOs are a great concept. I've definitely absolutely seen some great things like Optimism Collective. I think that's cool. I've seen all kinds of projects taking similar steps in this direction. So I certainly see a path for token. It's going to take some time to do it right. And we're not going to take any shortcuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I think that a token included within a game can unlock some very cool potential. I would like to talk a little bit about extracting from the economy. This has been a topic of conversation for a variety of different games, especially those that you're able to earn from. I'm wondering what mechanisms are in place to discourage people from simply playing to extract from the game.
Well, Conquest is quite safe, right? The tickets which players consume to win cards come from spending money or other silver cards. So as long as we manage the additional facets for these two items, things should be fine. In Skyweaver, the rank leaderboards, the rank leaderboard rewards are fixed each week. It's not influenced by the number of participants. You have to be in the top 250 at the moment in order to win some free tickets and silver cards. This way, real players can win tradable items for free, since bots at JIT right now aren't very good at the game, and it has minimal impact on the economy. But speaking about bots, in the first month of open beta, we had some of them in the Conquest queue that were more than willing to pay for tickets because the gold cards were in such high demand at the time. We took measures to stop them since they were just taken away from the real players and it wasn't fair. Nor was it enjoyable to play against these fake accounts. So the weeks and months following the launch, we spent some time implementing detection tools to stop them. It's been very effective. One day, I'm sure we'll have some kind of privacy protecting proof of identity system that we can all use that'll certainly make virtual economy design much easier for the and overall player experience more enjoyable. So looking forward to that. But funny enough, the tradable stickers, which you can obtain for free by inviting friends, we opened up trading for them on a market, which means they can be sold. And each month there's new stickers to get. On paper, it sounds pretty exploitable. You invite friends with your special link, and when they level up, you get points, which convert to stickers. But this feature has been in the game for almost half a year, but pretty much no one has been taking advantage of it. We assumed eventually we'd have to tweak the design once it started to get gamed, but it's lasting a lot longer than we originally thought. So the takeaway is, even when the design is exploitable, it doesn't mean people will be successful or that anyone will try to exploit it at a meaningful scale, at least, you know, not super fast. I can understand why this is the case for Skyweaver. In hindsight, we have yet to do like a big marketing push, and our player base is mostly gamers, so we're in the very early stages, but still pretty fun.
Yeah, that is interesting. I'm wondering if there's any challenges that have arisen in the game economy, given it's player-driven, and how those issues were resolved, if there were any issues.
Aside from the challenges of having tradable items that I already touched on, and to summarize, cultivating an environment where the sense of progression can still persist, despite the fact important items from that progression loop can be bought. I'd say the other challenge has been creating additional monetization streams. We sell conquest tickets that produce cards, and we take a fee from the players trading those cards. So when it came to hero skins, which we launched a few months ago, we deliberated quite a bit on how to monetize them. It started to become clear when we outlined the two extremes. On one hand, we basically just sell them in perpetuity and call it a day. The market would do its thing, and players would choose to engage with them or not. And on the other hand, these skins could be minted from what we consider core economy items like gold cards. And this is great because gold cards, which ultimately come from tickets, which we already monetize, are burned to mint these beautiful golden skins. So not only would this be a wonderful narrative, it serves as like a much desired sink for gold cards because we didn't have one for that from the get-go. So for those familiar with our economy, you'd know we landed somewhere in the middle. So each hero skin can be minted for 10 gold cards plus a minting fee. And the minting fee adjusts up as new skins are minted. This was the design we chose, and we were happy with it. But even after, our job wasn't finished, because perhaps the most challenging thing during this whole process was thinking about the future skins. Obviously, we'd love to create more skins and ideally monetize those as well. But since these legacy skins, we called them, would boost the amount of conquest points players would receive in game, we had to be very forthcoming about our thoughts on this and communicate them well in advance. And that's the other huge part of this puzzle. And economy design, a huge part of that, I think, is communication. You have to communicate constantly with your players and be proactive with their questions around the economy. I think there's no wrong answers. As long as you're open about the present, open about the future, open to change. For us, when it came to talking about the future hero skin releases and whether or not they would provide similar bonuses to Conquest, the players weren't necessarily looking for a direct answer. It was enough to simply be open with our thinking. Every time we release an update or a new feature, it is accompanied by like a lengthy blog post and FAQ. We've probably done 200 of these. So if you can be consistent with comms and ensure there's little to no distortion between product and marketing, your players will be able to confide in the fact that the team has a strong grasp on these sensitive variables and will do their best. We regularly engage with the community, obviously, provide noticing for the smallest of things and are prepared to make up for the little hiccups that inevitably will pop up from time to time. So all of this is a lot easier with fantastic community managers. So shout out to ours, Marcelo Chavri. But yeah, going back to system design, as a general rule, when it comes to integrating new items like hero skins, after core items have already been established in a virtual world, I would look at ways to have them complement existing items. Not only does it inspire greater confidence, but it genuinely strengthens your virtual world and makes it more resilient. The downside is that it becomes more expensive for a developer to reward players and potentially monetize them in the short term, as the virtual economy becomes very cyclical. For example, minting and giving away cards to attract new players or reward old ones isn't going to be free when they are so closely connected to the core systems that generate revenue. To put it plainly, no one's going to buy tickets in Skyweaver if we mint a billion silver cards so that marketing can use them to attract new players. That's why it's always a good idea to have different item classes within your world. So in Skyweaver, we're able to mint a bunch of stickers and hand them out for free, and it'll have no negative impacts on the core economy, since we decided in advance these stickers wouldn't be considered core items.
Yeah, cool. I think that makes sense. I'm wondering, from the perspective of a game economy designer, could you share how challenges of creating a sustainable economy differ from a non-blockchain game?
A churn paying user in a blockchain game negates the revenue of a new paying user. Essentially, in a Web3 game, you need your players to stick around forever. It's probably not realistic. It's definitely probably not realistic, but it makes sense. I mean, it's whether it's realistic or not, there's probably some truth to it. Today, we use like terms in the gaming industry like LTV that owners can use to compare against the cost to acquire a new user. How it works, it's like basically if your marketing costs are lower than the user's LTV, then you should run those campaigns. For Web3 though, if 100 new paying users are joining every month, but 100 are leaving, then really what you'll be left with is whatever marketing fees you're able to extract. Of course, it's not one-to-one, so some players will own more than others, but on it averages out. So it's been a process to having to revisit these KPIs and just making sure it still makes sense to us. Now, all this stuff, it falls under monetization, but it's important to touch on, because I wouldn't consider a virtual economy healthy if it cannot support the people who maintain it.
Yeah, I like the way you put that. So last question for today before we open up the floor for questions. How does Skyweaver's economy design differ from other blockchain TCGs?
These two words stick out: relevance, reciprocity. Relevance because anytime we release an item class, we intend to always support it and will continue to define its place within the virtual world. From a game design perspective, we committed since day one to always be able to balance cards. This means the card's abilities and stats are not locked. It's a fact that might turn some people off, but in practice, I can't recall the last time someone was disappointed. We've always said we'd never take away from the core identity of the cards we create. And players are cool with that, I think. So it just goes back to communication. They understand our reasoning because we ultimately want Skyweaver to be the next big card game in esports. And that's going to be tough to do unless we make balance changes or blacklist cards from play. Weighing those two options, we went with the first. So that's why relevance plays a huge role in the way we approach game design and economy design. And then there's reciprocity, which is equally important. To us, it's about fairness, acting in good faith. We recognize players choose to spend their time and money in our virtual world, and we don't take that for granted. Where this comes into practice in economy design, I would give the example of the hero skins again. We effectively chose to extract less by requiring gold cards in addition to the minting fee. I'm pretty confident we could have captured more of the value had we gone with just USDC. And it's likely several buyers didn't even realize gold cards were being burnt when they minted a skin because these buyers were just quoted in USDC. Okay, final tangent, because I know I made a couple of them. But this is really cool. The reason players are only quoted in USDC for the hero skin purchase, despite the fact that 10 gold cards are required, is because we're able to combine all of our tech, NiftySwap, and Sequence in order to construct a transaction where the player would simply buy up the cheapest gold cards, burn them, and apply a minting cost all in one. So players just go to the market, buy a skin, everything happens behind the scenes. Of course, players can select gold cards that they already own upon checkout, but if you don't own any, it's not a problem. And doing it this way reduces friction and makes purchases a lot easier. So yeah, that I'll leave it there. That's everything. Everything I talked about, it's all live. We're in the middle of finalizing our plans for next year. Looking good. We're going to go deep with new progression elements, and we'll introduce some novel features that I hope will be just more aha moments for gamers. So hopefully I was able to share some useful insights over how we approach the economy of Skyweaver thus far and how we will be thinking moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Thanks for answering those questions and providing some awesome details about the economy design. You know, we're always interested in learning more about that here at Economics Design. So with that said, I'm going to open up questions from the floor. So if you have any questions, feel free to unmute yourself, or you can just write the questions in the Discord chats section. We'll wait for some questions.
Cool.
So there's a question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Crystal. So there's a question here about whether it'll be tough for new players to learn the mechanics of the game, if I understand the question correctly. So essentially, if I understand correctly, is there a learning curve for learning the game, participating in the economy within it?
There's a learning curve for the mechanics. Achieving mastery in Skyweaver is more difficult than achieving mastery in Hearthstone. If you play Hearthstone, that's a good comparison for you. The economy, like I mentioned, you can get the tradable. If you're interested in participating in the economy and doing so for free, once you get good enough, you'll be high on the leaderboard. That's when you'll get free tickets and silver cards, and then you can use that for conquest. What's like a byproduct of that system is the ranked leaderboard has really good players. Conquest has even better players. And I've found that as a result, ranking up high enough to get tradable rewards on the ranked leaderboard, you don't have to be the best of the best, is what I'm saying. Because a lot of those super, super good players are playing Conquest. And that's separate from the ranking leaderboard.
Great. So there's another question here. Hopefully that answers the question. You know, please feel free to write if you have a follow-up question to that. And The next question here is, how long did it take to create the marketplace in the game? And was that a difficult thing to create?
We had like Nifty Swap, I want to say in like 2019. We made Nifty Swap pretty quickly after we, Philippe Castonguay, he's one of the co-authors for the LM55. So it was following that token standard that he started with Nifty Swap. So yeah.
Okay. We also have a compliment that the game is a great game to play, and that whenever someone's stressed out, they love playing the game. So it's always good to hear stuff like that, right? I believe someone else is typing a question here. Let me take a look. So again, following up about the marketplace, they're wondering if there's any advice to give about understanding how to construct a marketplace, or what, you know, what essentially constitutes a good marketplace versus a not so good marketplace.
Yeah, definitely check out Nifty Swap. As I mentioned, I personally think that a lot of games in the future, Web3 games, they'll want to incorporate fungible items, because I think fungible items just work a lot. They make a lot more sense for games. And NFTs, of course, obviously, they're both great. They both have their uses. And what's great, it's going to be an open economy. And that means that players aren't going to be constrained to a specific, you can't constrain them to a specific market. So that's good. And what's important, though, is kind of looking ahead. And that's why I just made a point to say, use token standards, use technology that players can easily build on top of. So I setting up the Nifty Swap, check out NiftySwap.io if you're specifically looking for integration. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think getting your hands dirty, probably taking a look at the marketplace and how it's designed is a good start. So another question here, which is, I believe a more general question about sustainable economies in the Web3 space. So in your experience kind of reviewing other games within the Web3 space, are there any like really core takeaways around its economy design that should be known for other projects?
Yeah, I go back to just thinking about it holistically. It should be able to expand and then contract back into nothing. It's like kind of a good jumping point to start off from. If you can design your economy to do that, so it'll be expanding in times of demand. If there's equilibrium, the supply would just remain, and in times of decreased demand, it's able to contract. Look at it from that angle, and I think that'll help you in designing a good model. Hopefully, that's enough there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that answers the question. So a couple more questions here. Question about the game is the free, I'm just quoting it here, is the free five unique cards deck, unique cards deck for new players all the same, or are they random?
Oh, those are all the same. Those are starter decks. And those cards that are in that starter, the cards that are in those starter decks are normal cards. So what I mean by that is you can find all those cards in the starter decks as silver and gold. We treat them equally as if they were as if they were any other card. So they're not random. They're going to be the same for all like the new players.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So by the way, if anyone has any questions, please type them now. Otherwise, there won't be any time for further questions. So just give you guys a minute to do that if you choose. Next question here is about providing liquidity on Nifty Swap. So the question is about what are the incentives to provide gold cards as liquidity on the AMM essentially?
There's the LP fee. That's what exists today.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that fee there, that's paid towards liquidity providers. Okay, I think that wraps up the questions for today. So with that said, it would be, thank you for coming on the podcast. It was awesome to have you here and answer some questions.
Oh, Ari, I was happy to join you guys. You guys, I love all the how organized you guys are. Really appreciate the time that you put towards organizing this and making sure it was really smooth. So thank you guys a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's our pleasure. Last but not least, I would like to remind our listeners that we have recently released our GameFi course that dives into the economics of blockchain games. And it's an excellent resource that I would recommend checking out to learn more. It can be found on the Economics Design website. So with that said, thanks everyone for joining today. It was great to have you all here to listen. And thank you, Salvatore.